Pure Dog Talk is the voice of purebred dogs. We talk to the legends of the sport and give you the tips and tools to create an awesome life with your purebred dog. From showing to preservation breeding, from competitive obedience to field work, from agility to therapy dogs, and all the fun in between, your passion is our purpose. Welcome to Pure Dog Talk. I'm your host, Laura Reeves, and I am excited. We have a guest today who's going to talk about something that I literally know nothing about, which is really cool. So Tammy Van Dusen is a Shetland Sheepdog breeder. She is also a trainer and competitor in herding events. And so little Miss Sporting Dog Geek, I'm super excited to learn about herding dogs. So welcome, Tammy.
Thank you. I'm really excited to be on here.
Very cool. Very cool. Very cool. So, okay, give us the 411. Tell us about how you got started in Shelties and what led you into the herding arena with Shetland Sheepdogs. I mean, not necessarily the breed most identified with herding competition. Would that be accurate?
Absolutely. I started, I think, years ago with my first dog. And I think like all of us do, you know, backyard breeder, picked the breed I wanted, started in obedience, then agility came along, so I got into agility, and that was a whole lot of fun. Then decided, I have a dog that has sheepdog in its name. I want to try herding.
Right.
And that was very complicated back then. That was over 25 years ago, because there were very few trainers who did what we call loose-eye upstanding dogs. They were mainly border collie trainers. And I was very lucky that the dog I chose to start herding with actually had lots of natural talent. Had I started with a dog without that kind of talent, I probably wouldn't have stuck with it.
Right, right. Well, I think that's true for all of us with performance events, and particularly like this, instinct. You know, in my case, field training, hunt tests, field trials like that. So you need to have a dog that has the skill to make it successful, right?
Absolutely, absolutely. And then that started me on the track of herding was not in his background, but the instinct was there.
Mm-hmm.
And then that's how I became a breeder, because I decided I wanted to add that instinct, keep that instinct, still stick to the standard, keep my temperaments, keep my structure, all of that. So I went back to his line and actually started my own breeding program, which I am really trying to focus on holding on to that herding instinct. Because like you said, the Shetland Sheepdog is not known to be out in herding trials.
Okay, so there's a couple directions we want to go, but I'm going to start with this because it fascinates me. When you were talking about Shetland Sheepdogs, you said loose eye, upstanding. And so I know enough, just enough to be dangerous. The eye is what the herding dog people talk about, the dog's really intense focus on the herding project, yes?
Yes. Yeah, and basically the two breeds that have what we call eye is the Border Collie and the Kelpie, that they control the stock more with that very intense eye.
Right.
You know, they can be on a complete lie down and still controlling their stock because mm-hmm. they lock in with that eye. And almost all the other breeds are what we call loose-eyed or upstanding because they control more with body movement rather than that really strong eye like a Border Collie has.
Okay. All right. So that is really good basic information that I had no idea. Excellent. So talk to us about herding competitions in general.
There are different sanctioning bodies like there are almost in anything anymore. Mm-hmm. So AKC has their own program. HBA, which is the American Herding Breed Association, has their own program. And I am actually a judge for that sanctioning body.
Okay.
And then ASCA, which is the Australian Shepherd Club, has their own program.
Okay.
They all have some things I don't like, and they all have some things I like. My goal is always, if I can have a herding championship in each sanctioning body, I have an all-around dog.
Okay, that's good.
So, yeah, and it just kind of depends, you know, what you want, how you want to go. AKC has just started a ranch dog course, which is more farm work, which is what HBA has always had. And so that always made HBA more fun, is because the ranch courses were different every farm you went to.
Okay, so this is cool. So talk a little bit about this. This is a real, more like what you would actually do with your working dog on a given day in a given situation.
Yes, And it's like agility. You get your course map, you go through, but yeah, it's a lot of gate work. It's a lot of sorting. It's not the arena course where everything is always the same.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why it's so much more fun, is because you're showing your dog can actually do the stock work that it's bred to do, and it's not a course trained dog.
Right. Absolutely. Okay. So pure basics of herding. Talk to us. I mean, herding 101. I have a whatever my breed is that I want to start working in herding competitions of some type in some governing body. What type of things am I looking for? What kind of stock am I looking for? What do I do?
Right. Yeah. And that's the hardest thing, is I always tell people this is the hardest sport to get into because you cannot do it at home.
Right.
All you can work on at home are rules. You know, your dog respecting you.
Mm-hmm.
I drove 2.5 hours one way for 10 years before I got my own stock.
Wow.
So it's finding an instructor. And like in any sport, I tell people, I don't care if it's confirmation, agility, obedience, go check out the facility before you sign up for a lesson.
Mm-hmm.
You know, even puppy classes, I tell people that. You know, go see how the person treats their students, how they treat the dogs. And then you're pretty much going to start with an instinct test, which we're just seeing what the dog naturally does. Will it work a little bit? Does it not work a little bit? Depending on the dog, I'll give it 3 or 4 different lessons to see if it's going to turn on more. An older dog that's had a lot of obedience training, it takes a little while for it to understand, oh, look, I get to do this.
Okay.
You know, I get to be free, and
right.
I get to try this out. And then some dogs you know right away. You just know, you know, this doesn't really have a lot of drive. You might want to go stick to another sport.
So when you are evaluating instinct, what is it? I've got a flock of ducks. I've got a couple sheep that aren't going to kill them. What are we looking for?
Right, yeah. Normally, most of us have what we call our school sheep.
Mm-hmm.
So they're sheep that are going to stay with the human. They're not going to be combative, you know, and go after a puppy or a dog.
Mm-hmm.
That way you can concentrate more on what the dog's doing.
Right.
And normally most of us start in a very small round pen. So everything is under control. There's no chasing going on. And you can start shaping the behaviors as they're starting, if they're starting to work.
And so what is the dog going to do that tells you this dog gets it or this dog doesn't get it?
Normally, they're going to go right in and either circle or start chasing, which is why I like a smaller pen, because even if they're chasing, I can step in and turn that into circling.
Okay.
So you're basically just wanting that dog, what we call on stock, you know, working, looking at them, you know, wanting to get at them. And the first couple of lessons, I do what I call controlled chaos. I want the instinct learning little behaviors, like to get to turn directions, but I'm not forcing it yet because I really want that dog to really want it before you really start correcting it.
Right. Okay. So on stock, that concept, so I can translate it to a pointing dog that is actually using its nose, or a dog that will actually sight point, or, you know, something along those lines.
Right.
Okay. Okay.
Right. And the big difference is trying to differentiate between the chase and the actual herding to get around and bring them to you.
Right.
And even some of our herding breeds, you have to decide, is that a chase prey drive or is that a herding that they're going to want to bring them to you? Because if it's all prey drive, you're probably never going to get the dog to herd and bring them to you.
No. I would think that would be a bad thing. I grew up in Southern Oregon. It's sheep country, man. If you have a dog that's out there chasing sheep, you have a dead dog. So, I mean, that's
absolutely.
Just reality.
Absolutely.
Sad and archaic as that may be, that is a fact. You know, if anybody's dog got out, they were chasing sheep, they were dead. Homie, don't play that here.
Yeah. Most of us don't. Yeah,
exactly. Okay, so let's talk about, just kind of dial in on the AKC events as a place to start. So what would be, you know, I've seen the title maybe herding instinct or something like that. So there are things that you can do as an owner to start proving your dog's sort of basic natural ability. Is that correct?
Right. Yeah, AKC has, their very bottom is the instinct testing, which a lot of the national clubs do.
Mm-hmm.
And that is just to see if your dog's got natural instinct and it's pass fail.
Mm-hmm.
From there, their next step up is the herding test class, and it's pass fail, but it's 2 legs under 2 different judges. And it's a smaller field, and you have to show a little bit of control, but it's still not perfect training.
Mm-hmm.
It's showing a change of direction that your dog can stop. Then from that, you go up to what's called the pre-trial class, which is the PT.
Mm-hmm.
It's bigger field. It's, again, pass-fail. And you're just showing you have more control in your dog. You're in a bigger field. You can stop your dog. You can, you know, call your dog off. And there again, it's two legs, two different judges. And then mm-hmm. from there, you go into the trial classes.
Okay.
And the trial classes are set up like almost all the other agility and obedience. We have started, intermediate, and advanced.
Okay.
And then each thing's kind of changed a little as you move up through the trial classes.
Sure. Excellent. So one of the things that I have in the back of my mind in the future, I want to do a book about all of the dual champions that are available. So sporting dogs, hounds, and herding dogs. So there uh-huh. is a dual champion title for herding dogs, correct?
Yes, yes.
And is that all herding dogs or not necessarily? All herding breeds?
Yeah, across the board with AKC, it would be anything that they are allowing into the herding trials.
And is there any breed they don't allow into the herding trials?
That's really, like, they keep adding more and more breeds, so it changes, like, literally, yeah.
Yeah.
You know?
Annually. Yeah, I get that.
Yeah.
Okay.
And some of them, I shake my head and go, okay, I don't know if that's really a herding breed, but you're mm-hmm. letting it in, so mm-hmm. we'll see.
Okay. Okay, but basically, if your dog is in the herding variety group, you can get a dual championship.
Yes, yeah, okay. Yeah. You get that herding championship, have your breed championship, you're going to be a dual champion.
Okay,
yes.
And from what I've been able to gather, which is why I have you here, I want to gather more, that's a really tough thing to accomplish, a very challenging title.
Yes, yes, because it was based on the confirmation points, because at that time, I think when herding started, that's all they had to compare it
right.
to, that and the obedience notch. You know, you have to have 15 total points. You have to have two first places, and one of those first places has to be a major point, mm-hmm. which there have to have been seven dogs in.
Okay. So almost identical.
Yeah, almost identical to confirmation, yeah.
And the field champion title in pointing breeds, same basic concept. So, okay. All right,
okay.
Very cool.
Yeah, and it is tough because, like all the dog sports, there are fewer and fewer people doing it. So to even mm-hmm. get those seven dogs in your advanced class is getting tough.
Mm-hmm.
And then depending on your breed, you know, you have to beat the Border Collies.
Right.
You have to beat all those other breeds to get that first place major.
Right. Right. Absolutely. And so this is a great segue then. Let's now talk a little bit more. We started on it earlier because I just got, you know, squirrel.
Yeah, I get that.
So can we go into some detail about the ways the different herding breeds work? You know, in the sporting group, we're divided into pointers, retrievers, and flushing spaniels. So is the division of how they do the job that extreme in the herding group or not so much?
It can be. As an instructor, there again, you need to know those breeds' foundations.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what is their natural instincts?
Right.
Because we do still have what were called the drovers, which would have been your Rotties, your Corgis, you know, that
right.
stayed in the back and pushed.
Right.
And then, of course, like your Border Collies and your Kelpies who do the big field,
mm-hmm.
you know, those big, huge outruns.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have what I call the all-around farm dogs, which were like the Shelties and the Belgians, you know, the dogs who had to do all the work.
Right.
So, yeah, when you're starting out, you need to know what that dog's natural tendencies are going to be genetic-wise.
Right.
But I still want to shape them into good work is good work.
And responsive to the handler and all of those sorts of things.
Right, right. You know, that their job is to go around and bring me the stock. I actually had really fun last year. I started a Rottie puppy from the beginning,
wow.
which was fun for me. But she was a natural driver because that's what she was bred to do. It was amazing to watch her at 8 weeks actually, like, drive sheep away.
Huh.
So I had to spend a lot of time teaching her to go out and around and bring them to me.
Right, which is what the test.
But I knew that because
right.
that's her breed.
Right,
yeah.
because that's what the
yeah.
tests wanted her to do.
Mm-hmm.
Not necessarily
mm-hmm.
what her natural instinct was to do.
Yes, yes.
Okay.
So, yeah, that's the main differences, but we're all judged the same.
Right.
So it doesn't matter what breed you're doing, because basically herding judging should be we are judging the sheep and the path that the sheep are taking, and are the sheep calm more so than the dog.
Interesting. Okay.
Hang tight, guys. Got a little bit of information for you. We'll be right back to the podcast.
in a minute. The best little country show in California is on Mother's Day weekend in Yuba City. Two Cities Kennel Club hosts their casual country western attire dog show May 10th through 12th at the Yuba Sutter Fairgrounds. We talk all the time here on Pure Dog Talk about the importance of fun matches for practice with our puppies and our young dogs. So the club is offering a bee match on Friday, along with the first of 3 days of obedience, rally, and barn hunt. The fun continues with special attractions for veterans on Saturday and a Brood Bitch Classic Sunday to celebrate Mother's Day. Two FSS open shows both days, along with CGC and health clinics, round out the offerings. The premium list is up at infodog.com for more details. Entries close April 24th. So tell us more. Tell us more about the scoring of herding. I would have thought it was on the dog's performance, and you're saying no, it's on the stock's condition.
Right, because how the stock is moving is actually what your dog is doing.
Okay.
You know, so yes, you can get points off for like a dog if he's not what they call on contact, if it's sniffing a lot or not looking, not working.
Mm-hmm.
But basically, it should be, you know, we always tell people a good herding run is like watching paint dry. You know, right. The sheep should be calm. They should be going through the course. The dog should just have constant pressure, moving them around, not running them. Mm-hmm. Everybody should be calm movement. But we always laugh. It's like a NASCAR race. Everybody comes to watch the bad stuff.
Come to watch the crash.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely.
Oh, my God.
So, and basically, you know, true stock is not going to go anywhere unless your dog makes them.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah. So how your dog makes them go is the way to go. And people forget that running stock is running the meat off the sheep.
Yep.
And stressing those sheep out.
Yep.
So if you're truly going to market, the dog who works too fast, too intense is going to lose that farmer money,
right?
Because you're running the meat off the stock.
Absolutely. And again, having grown up in sheep country in Southern Oregon, I'm sorry, uh-huh. The deer beasties are not the brightest bulbs.
Right.
They're just not. I'm sorry. They're not. And I would think that working with sheep without a dog that was particularly good would be a real challenge because of that.
Right. And that's why when we start with our school sheep. Mm-hmm. So that the dog can understand what the job is. Mm-hmm. Then you get them off the school sheep and start working what we call honest sheep, which are literally only going to do what the dog makes them do.
Okay. Fascinating. All right. So when we were first talking about this interview, one of the things that we got into that is maybe the most fascinating to me is your conversation about genetic loss of performance skills or inherited instinct. And what you have seen in your own breed and other breeds working on training these herding dogs.
Right.
I wonder if you could kind of go into some more depth on that, because to me, it's very, very fascinating. And you see certain breeds that are ancient, right? So they've been bred for this practice
right.
Forever and ever and ever and ever and ever. And it is literally coded into their DNA. And then you
right.
have other breeds that are perhaps newer or more recent, you know, 150, 200 years. It's not maybe as coded into the DNA. And so that is what I've experienced personally in the sporting group. And so I'd be really fascinated to hear from you how you have experienced that in herding dogs.
Yeah, and it's the same in herding dogs. You know, it's the border collie there again. They have been bred for years to only do one
mm-hmm.
thing. And that is still holding true.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because there again, like you said, you have thousands of years
right.
of that.
Right.
And then, unfortunately, a lot of the breeds, people don't care about that anymore.
Right.
You know, they're breeding for the confirmation ring or the agility ring. They really don't care about if it's a herding dog that it still works stock.
Mm-hmm.
So we are losing a lot of that. And then at the same time, I have bred into some pedigrees that I have just seen like a raw dog at an instinct
mm-hmm.
test. And I'm like, I want that pedigree, and there's no herding titles behind it, but those have produced my best herding dogs.
Because
so
you saw
there.
Instinct, and no one was using it. Okay.
Yes, yes, right, right. And it is hard to build it back up.
Yeah, tell me that system you were talking about where you can breed a 10 to a 2 and get a
And you get 2.
Right,
yeah. So let's say, yeah, absolutely. You know, I always tell people I break the breeds down like from 1 to 10. And a 10 would be the border collie
mm-hmm.
that has bred for instinct. If I tested 10 Border Collies, 10 Border Collies are probably going to pass.
Right.
The Belgians, which I also own, I love that breed because they're still keeping the herding alive. So let's say I tested 10, 8 of them would probably have instinct. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, my Shelties, if I tested 10, only 3 would probably show raw natural instinct.
Interesting.
Which is really sad. Mm-hmm. And then I take those and break them down. So let's say I have those 3 Shelties, and now I break it down to 1 to 5. A 1 being could probably pass the test class, has a little bit of desire, but isn't really going to go much further.
Mm-hmm.
And a 5 being that chore dog who can go out with me, do anything I ask him to do. And unfortunately, out of those 3, only like 2% would be that 5.
Wow. Okay.
And then the others would be down in that 1 and 2 area. So then when we talk about breeding, if I breed my 5 to a 2, I'm probably only going to get 2s.
Right.
Because we just don't have enough behind us. You know, mm-hmm. we don't have those hundreds and thousands of years.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a stepping stone to build it up. It really is. And it's hard to get it up there. And even if I breed my 5 to a 5, I may be lucky and get 1 5.
Yeah. Well, and that's why it struck me so strongly, because certainly we experienced the same thing in my breed. And so, mm-hmm. you know, that really great performance dog that maybe in a litter of 10, you might, if you're really lucky, get 1 or 2 that are that really great performance dog.
Yes, yes. And then the rest are great for
right.
the people who want to get
exactly.
started and do
yep.
stuff. Or for me, most of my other performance dogs are in agility and obedience, so they have good working ethics. So yeah, they're great for that mm-hmm. kind of stuff.
Yeah, and they go on and they're great, in my case, companions
yes.
or foot hunting gun dogs or
right.
what have you.
Yes, absolutely. I had a conversation with a cattle dog breeder that I found really interesting, too, that we were talking how fast you can lose it.
Yes.
Genetically.
Yes.
And top cattle dogs said in 2 generations they can lose it.
Interesting.
And those are like top.
Right.
So I'm like, okay, if this is a breed who actually has been bred for years, then I lose it in 1 generation.
Well, and this is why this was sort of fascinating to me. My family started in Clumber Spaniels, okay? So bred mm-hmm. for hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds, I mean, ancient, okay? To be Flushing Spaniels. When we got our first Clumber Spaniel, the breed had not been actively participating in any sort of competitive field event in 50 years.
Wow.
Okay?
Yeah.
And that first dog that we got had all the natural instinct he needed, went out, earned basic hunt test titles before there even were spaniel hunt tests.
Right.
And so this is why it's interesting to me, whereas wire-haired pointer is a much younger breed, you know, developed just in the late 1800s, blah, 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 and you can see a great deal of loss of intensity when you don't pay attention to it, as you say, in just a few generations.
Yeah. And I don't think people realize that. And it's the one thing I try to, I really want when I do clinics and things mm-hmm. to explain to people, you know, you have the dog you have.
Right.
Genetically, this is how much talent it has. Enjoy it. Have fun with it. But don't try to make it a 5 if it's a 2.
Right.
You know, enjoy it. Learn. And then know what to look for with your next dog.
Mm-hmm.
But there again, we can take a 5 and make it a 1 really easy, too, with that training.
Yes. And that's
yeah,
like
you know,
a whole nother podcast.
yeah.
Because
yes.
I totally agree with that. I completely, you can, we say in the pointing dogs, when we're looking for run, you can always bring a dog in, but you can't push it out.
Right. Yes. Absolutely. Absolutely. It's really important for people to realize, yes, maybe that's your goal to go there, but start with the dog you have.
Right.
And don't expect that dog to go there. Maybe you got lucky like I did with my first dog and actually had that kind of talent. You know, like I tell people, I've bred several litters that I've not kept puppies mm-hmm. out of because they just weren't. I only have so many slots like most of us
mm-hmm.
who breed,
yeah.
you know, and I need that instinct in order to keep that dog.
Absolutely. And so then, you know, everybody talks about breeding and what you're breeding for and all of this. So then talk to me. And again, this is when I feel your pain. Talk to me about, I have to have instinct, but I also have to have the dog that is conformationally correct that I could take and show and finish. And, you know, I can't just have the one piece.
Right. Absolutely. And especially working dogs, you had better have structure.
Right.
And people don't realize that anymore. And I don't care what sport you're doing. You've got to have a good, rounded dog to be able to do it and get that movement and keep your structure. And I still want to look like a Sheltie.
Right.
You know, I want to stick to, there are some things in our breed right now in the conformation ring I don't like. So my dogs aren't in the breed ring as often because I still like what I call an old-fashioned head, which they don't like anymore.
Right.
And I'm not going to give that up. But yeah, to find a dog, the dogs who are structurally sound, you know, go with our standard and then actually pull in some instinct, it's hard to do.
Mm-hmm.
It's really hard. And that's why I say I like doing the instinct testing, because I have found some lines who you would never know by seeing that raw dog.
Mm-hmm. Fascinating. And I think it's so important to remember these standards for all of these breeds were written so that the dog could do its job properly. So
yes, absolutely.
Breeding a dog that doesn't meet the standard just because it has lots of heart and lots of desire and lots of instinct doesn't do you any good long term, because it's still physically going to struggle to do the job.
Yes, right.
Awesome.
Yeah, yeah. If your movement isn't there,
right,
you know, you're not going to be able to get around the stock. Or like in your breed, they're not going to be able to go out into a field and cover ground
all day long.
Yes, yes.
Right. Exactly.
Yes. So it's that fine line. And unfortunately, we are fighting with the Shelties, even in our parent club. They are not convinced that we are a herding breed, which is pretty amazing.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you see it in sporting dogs. You see it in hounds, too. I mean, the Cockers. I was very fortunate when my family got Clumbers. There were a group of people that worked together to create the first Spaniel hunt test. Okay. And they copied it from the American Spaniel Club, which is primarily American Cockers. And the woman that we worked with had American Cockers that she took out, and these little dogs were great little working dogs. But again, so many people aren't doing it, aren't actually doing the performance piece. And so you lose that particular aspect. I think you lose a pretty important part of your breed.
Oh, absolutely. And it's funny because people don't realize that a working line makes the good all-around dog. Because to me, a true working dog, when it's on 100%. And when it's off, it's asleep at my feet.
Right.
You know, they're not that high energy 24/7.
I guess to me, I hate the working and show line concept. You know, like they are their breed. Their definition of their breed is what they do. So there should be no split. There should be no division between what I do and what I am, because they're the same thing.
Right. And it's fun to go out and see. And I always really push on this when I do some of the clinics, is it's fun to come out, test your dog, see if it has instinct.
Yeah.
But just because it has instinct doesn't mean you have to do herding.
Right.
Because it is a hard, expensive sport to get into.
All of them are, yes.
And it takes commitment, and it takes, because, well, the field trials are the same thing. There's not much of that you can do at home.
No, well, I can yard break a dog, right? Like, I can woe train it, but I can't proof it. Because I don't have any wild birds flying away.
Right.
And, you know, if you get into hardcore pointing breed field trials, you got to have a horse and a horse trailer in it, you know.
Yeah,
it's a lot. But I think that a lot of what we're losing today is that basic instinct that I would love to see more people take advantage of testing and using just even basic instinct as part of their breeding programs.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah,
awesome.
Absolutely.
All right. Well, Tammy, I have taken enough of your time. I appreciate you tremendously. I have been absolutely fascinated by this conversation, and I know the listeners will be as well.
Good. I was honored to be a part of the podcast.
Well, thank you so much.
Two Cities Kennel Club and the surrounding community were dramatically impacted by the devastating campfire last fall. The club will hold a two-day raffle at its show to raise funds for a new Yuba County AKC Reunite disaster trailer. Each AKC Pet Disaster Relief Trailer is stocked with essential, non-perishable supplies needed to set up and provide safe sheltering options for pets during an evacuation. The tragedy of last year's fires reinforced the need for a trailer in Northern California. To donate items to the raffle or to donate directly to this critically important disaster relief trailer, go to the events section of the Pure Dog Talk Facebook page for contact information. As always, if you have any questions or input, we'd love to hear from you. The show notes and links to resources on today's topic are available at puredogtalk.com. Drop us a note in the comments or email to laura@puredogtalk.com. Remember, guys, this podcast is for you. So if you want to know something, give me a holler. We'll do a podcast for you. If you wouldn't mind, you could help me out here. Take a couple minutes to visit iTunes and give us a review. The Dog Show Superintendents Association is a proud supporter of Pure Dog Talk. Our dog show superintendents are the hardworking people who make the dog show function. They are advocates for education and mentorship in the purebred dog fancy. So stop by the super's desk at your next show. Tell them how much you love Pure Dog Talk and give them a shout out for their support. That's all for today. Thank you for joining us on Pure Dog Talk.